everybody, and welcome to the Datacated Show. Today, we have a special guest with us named Jesse Liberty, and he's the author of a brand new book called Git for Programmers. He's also authored several other books, but I'm really excited to talk to him today about Git and version control and how programmers use Git in general. So as you're joining the session, a couple of things. Let us know where you're tuning in from. It's always interesting to see where our diverse audience is joining us from. Also, type into the comments hashtag Liberty. This is Jesse's last name, but it's also a way for you to enter a raffle. So I'll just put this up on screen for a minute here. So hashtag Liberty to enter for the raffle to win a copy of the book. We're going to select two winners. One we typically select at the halfway point of the session, and then the second winner will be announced towards the end of the session. So I'm going to go ahead and remove this from the screen. And as you're typing in hashtag Liberty, also let us know if you have any questions and comments throughout the session. We're going to take questions as they come, and we really try to engage with you guys as much as possible. So if you've got questions on anything that Jesse or myself are talking about, please feel free to put them in the comments, and we're going to take as many as we can. All right, at this point, I'm going to go ahead and bring Jesse up on our virtual stage here. Hello, Jesse. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. That's all I have for now. That may be all I have for the whole show.
No. You have a lot to say. I think we'll start with your shirt. Let's talk about your shirt. It says stay at
home, wear a mask.
Stay at home, wear a mask. So this I think should tell people how much you enjoy programming if you're wearing a shirt like this.
Truly geek.
Yes, but when we started just talking, I guess last week, you mentioned you didn't always enjoy programming. So I think it would be really helpful for you to provide an introduction. Who's Jesse Liberty? And also tell us when your love for programming actually started.
Okay. I started programming in high school. And that was back in the Fortran days with punch cards or punch tape, and hated it. So I tried it again in college, and we were still on minis and hated it. And so I went to social work school. And then in my first year of social work school, we got an MPM machine. And that's where I first liked it, because I had complete control of the machine. MPM was later replaced was a variant on CPM, but for multi-use. And it was great, because if I typed in a line and somebody else typed in a line and then I hit enter, he had to wait. It was really bad. So then came DOS, and then came Windows. And at some point, I wanted to be a professional programmer. So I went to a friend who was a professional programmer, and I said, I want to learn C. And he said, great, go learn assembly first, which was good advice, actually. So I spent a couple months learning assembly, and then I learned C. And the trick with C is pointers, but if you've learned assembly, then pointers are easy. So worked in C for a while. C++ came along, which was sort of a Trojan horse to take C programmers into object-oriented programming, which worked quite well. And in 2000, I got the early bits for C#, and I said, I'm not going back, and you can't make me. So I've been programming C# for about 20 years, and programming the web for most of that. But the last few years, I've been programming using Xamarin, which is a cross-platform mobile framework.
So you pretty much use them all at this point, huh?
All within the .NET world. There's a whole other world I haven't touched.
Yes.
And other than that, I live in Massachusetts with my wife and two kids. Well, that's not true. I used to live with my wife and two kids, but the kids have grown. So now they're in New York, one in Flatbush and one on Long Island.
Oh,
and
cool.
The one in Flatbush is, the one in Flatbush is in social work school, and the one in Long Island is training service dogs.
Oh, wow. Okay. Very interesting. Yeah. Well, I just got out of New York, and I'm in my new headquarters here in New Jersey, which I absolutely love. We've got several folks joining us here. Kimberly saying good morning. We've got Srikant from India. Brian is really looking forward to our session. We have a lot of hashtag liberties coming in. Susan Walsh, classification guru, has joined us. Just going to say good morning here to Charles from Santa Barbara. Let me see, Lewis. He's the Brit living in New Hampshire, currently moving to Atlanta, end of the month. Awesome. Thank you guys all for joining us. And lastly, Scott saying, you know, come and get it. So yes, we're going to get to get. And just a quick reminder, guys, we are giving away two books. If you're just joining us now, Git for Programmers, all you have to do is type in #Liberty to enter the raffle. All right, Mr. Liberty, let's get into it. Let's start with what the Git is Git, you know? What is Git? Why do we need it?
When I started programming, if I was about to do something that was dangerous, I would make a complete backup of my directory.
Yeah.
And then I'd go do a little work, and then I'd make another complete backup. And it was slow, and it was time-consuming, and it wasn't even all that safe. So source control came along, and source control said, we're going to do all that work for you. You check things into your repository. Repository is just a place that keeps your code, and we'll keep it for you, and we'll keep doing that as often as you want. Git came along after source control already existed. It was invented by the man who invented Linux, initially for his private use, and then for the Linux community, and now for the wider community. And Git is like any other source control, except that it's totally different. And the way that it's different is that there's no central repository necessarily. It's distributed. And most important, it's wicked fast. So you can check things in very quickly, which means you'll do it more often. And there's some specific terminology for doing that. You know, Git has its own terminology, and it has a reputation for being difficult to learn, but I have a theory about that, which is that most of the books and most of the learning on Git go into how Git works, the internals. And in my book, I chose not to do that at all, just to talk about how you use it and when you use these different things. And I hope that makes it more accessible. And the final point I'll make on this is that the foreword is by John Galloway, who's at Microsoft and an old buddy. And he writes in there, and I think accurately, that many people know how to use Git. But what they know is how to get things in and get things out and modify things and maybe merge things. But after that, that's it. And there are other parts to Git that can be extremely helpful, especially if you get into trouble with it. So we have a whole chapter on how to get out of trouble. And we also have some chapters on more advanced techniques that can give you a better history that you can look at and that can help you find where a bug in your code was introduced. There's a number of advanced topics that many Git developers don't already know about. But boy, I do ramble on. The book starts with what is version control, what is Git. We do it quickly, but we don't assume that you already know that. And the examples are done in incredibly simple C#. So even if you don't know C#, it's not a problem because they're dead simple.
Yeah, you know, I really liked what you said about not including kind of how Git works, because it makes me think of the simple things that we use, like a microwave, for example. You don't get a manual that tells you exactly how the microwave was built or how it works, or you just get a simple, okay, put food in, close door, press buttons, when it's done, open door, and on your way. And I think books like that or manuals like that are a lot more useful. They're practical. You can apply them right away versus getting into the how it works part, which I guess to some it might be really important, but I think for the vast majority of people using Git, you probably don't need to know exactly how everything works, right?
Right. Well, there are some places in other software where you do need to know how it works, because if you get into trouble, you need to know how to get out of trouble.
Right.
With Git, I pretty strongly believe with Git, you can get yourself out of any situation without knowing about the trees and the blobs and the inside working pieces. Similarly, with C#, there's a lot to learn, but you don't need to really learn how to write a compiler to use C#.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's talk briefly about your book. Now, there are books out there on Git. So I wanted to ask, why do we need another one? And how is your book different? I mean, I guess you spoke about the fact that you're not going to get into the technical side of how it actually works. But what else would make this book stand out from the other Git books?
Well, if you look at it, it's pretty small.
Yeah, it is actually.
And yes, I often have to say we don't sell books by the pound. I actually set out to make it smaller. I hate having to read through a tome in order to learn something that's not all that difficult and complicated. So I left out a fair amount of the history of Linux and of Git. And I left out, as we said, a lot of the internals and went to the core that most developers are going to need most of the time. Mm-hmm. So that's what allows it to be a little bit thinner and allows people to learn Git a little bit more quickly without getting in trouble.
Yes. Awesome. We actually had a question that I was going to ask you anyways. It's from a LinkedIn user. That means their privacy settings are on. But the question is, how long did it take to write this book?
I write quickly. And I write on weekends. This took about 6 or 8 Sundays, I think, to write. But then there's editing and fussing.
Do you write a book? I know there are some suggestions that say just write the whole thing and then go back and fix, or do you kind of write and fix at the same time?
Typically, I'll write a chapter and then fix that.
Okay.
And then write another chapter. We're talking about the programming books. I have a unpublished novel, Know Any Agents, that I write really differently, and I do more of what you're saying, which is I write and edit. That took about a year, and now I'm 2 years into editing. So it's a different process with a novel.
What's the novel about?
The novel is called Sex, Drugs, and Bipolar, and it's about a badly broken boy as he goes through adolescence. And it's pretty much what the title says. There's a fair amount of bisexual sex. He gets very involved with LSD and eventually is diagnosed as bipolar, and I won't give away the end.
Okay. Well, guys, stay tuned. This is a non-programming book. That's very, very interesting. I know you've written several books. What is the total count now with this new Git book?
It very much depends on how you count it. If you don't count second editions and third editions and spin-offs, it's about 18.
Okay. I count second editions and third editions.
Then it's about 25 or 23, somewhere in there.
Okay. Wow. Amazing.
It's a lot of books. Well, it used to be that I started writing books in 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it used to be that most books paid out their advance, but that's about it. But some books took off. And so my C++ book sold 75,000 copies.
Oh, wow.
Today, that's unheard of. There's far fewer books sold. And the reason for that is because people look things up on Google and they look things up on Stack Overflow. And those are perfectly reasonable things to do.
Yeah.
My way of learning is I don't love exploring Google for something new, for something I know nothing about, because it's hard to get a coherent story. It's great when you know what you want to find, then you need the syntax or you need a general review of some particular part. But I like a story of technology so that I get it in the right order. So I tend to read books when I want to learn something new. And then I use Google and Stack Overflow when I need to zoom in on some particular part.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's killing the book market.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it is, but like you said, sometimes it really does make sense to just check Google and Stack Overflow. But for others, I think it's nice. I still prefer the book, and I prefer the book in my hands. I know a lot of people are fine with the PDFs or the eBooks. I'm more of a paperback or hardcover book person.
I don't mean to interrupt you. I saw a great cartoon of this woman is sitting with her grandson and kids on a tablet, and she's reading a book, and he looks at her like this, and she says, "It's an iPad made out of trees," which I thought was brilliant.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. The book that you said sold over 75,000 copies, I believe you said it's the C++ one. What do you think triggered that sale?
That was my first book, and it's Teach Yourself C++ in 21 Days, which I got no end of hassle about. You can't learn C++ in 21 days. And I said, fine. It's Teach Yourself C++ in 21 chapters. Is that better? Which, you know, that's all it was. It was a hype to call it 21 days, but it was 21 chapters.
Yeah.
That book hit the market and didn't do anything. And then C++ started to catch on. What was different about my book, all the C++ books, and as far as I know, until mine, taught C++ to C programmers.
Mm-hmm.
My book taught C++ to novice programmers, and mm-hmm. that set it apart. And I got lucky in the timing. And, you know, unfortunately, what I didn't get lucky in is my percentage, because my first book I didn't know. So I took a really low percentage.
You don't negotiate the first book, right? You're just trying to get out there. But with, you know, 18 to 25 books now, hopefully now you've learned how to.
I've learned, but unfortunately the market is, you know.
Yes. Well, it seems like you love writing books. I mean, only a person who really loves something would do it more than once or twice or three or four or five and keep going.
Well, it's very much like programming. And I really love programming. That if I had to give one up, I'd give up books and keep the programming. But they're similar in certain ways, that you you think about a problem, you break it down into smaller components until you get to components that you know how to do, and you put those together in a logical order.
Yeah.
It's somewhere between programming and teaching.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the ways in which a good teacher teaches carry over into writing good, at least intro books. And I taught for 1 year at Brandeis as a teacher to the evening school. This was great. They wanted to hire me to teach this class on object-oriented programming. So I was all hired, and they said, you don't have a master's. We can't hire you. And I said, okay, give me one. They wouldn't do that, but they hired me anyway.
Oh, okay. Good, good. So that had a happy ending. That's good.
Did that for a year. Realized it's a lot of work.
We have someone here that thinks you're an inspiration. You're a mentor for young kids all over the world, especially those who want to get into a programming career. So you're being recognized here.
It's very kind.
We do have a lot more questions coming in, but I actually wanted to start with, you know, how many people actually use Git before I get to some of the other questions?
According to Stack Overflow, over 90% of programmers are using Git.
90%. Wow.
Well over 90%. I don't know what I think it's either 93 or 97% of programmers in any language mm-hmm. are using Git.
Are there no competitors?
There are competitors, but the programming world has shifted to Git because its performance is outstanding, because it's decentralized, and because it's where all the cool kids went.
Okay, you got to follow the cool kids. Now, we had a question here on GitHub. And before I ask that question, maybe you can tell the audience the difference between Git and GitHub.
Yes, there are three things that people conflate. One is Git, which is the the source control system.
Mm-hmm.
One is GitHub, which is a place where you can put your code offsite. It's a central repository, and that has two tremendous advantages. One is that your code is safely offsite, and the other is, if you're working in a team, I can put my code up on GitHub, and you can download it, and that allows us to work together very cleanly. Mm-hmm. So GitHub is a place in some sense. It's in the cloud, and they were recently purchased by Microsoft. So GitHub is increasingly tied in with Azure.
Mm-hmm.
But the way to think about GitHub is it's a place, whereas Git is a version control system. Now, GitHub, the people who make GitHub also make GitHub for desktop. And GitHub for desktop is a tool, a GUI tool for using Git. So you've got Git, GitHub, and GitHub for desktop. And keeping those straight, good luck.
Well, thank you for that really good explanation. Now, the question on GitHub was from Kevin, and he's asking, is there anyone's GitHub that you would recommend that people go and check out?
There are a number of repositories. Personally, I use GitHub. It's increasingly integrated into Microsoft Azure. I'm a .NET guy. That seems like the right place to me. There are other perfectly good repositories. One of the advantages of GitHub, and I know this is true in other places, is that you can have public or private repositories, and they're free. So you can have as many private repositories as you want, and you can have as many public as you want, and the public repositories, anybody can download the code, and that's terrific for open source. And the private repositories are great for companies who have code they don't want to share.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that makes sense. So we're almost at the halfway point here. So I'm going to do the first book giveaway. Just a heads up to everyone who has joined us, hashtag Liberty is the way to play our little raffle game. We'll put this up on screen and we'll give folks just a minute to go ahead and get their hashtags in if they haven't so far. And I think as we wait for that, it will be helpful for us to hear from you, Jesse. What do you think was your most favorite and least favorite part of writing this book? I know you've written several books, but this one specific.
Well, usually I write books about things I don't really know. And I stay a couple chapters ahead of the book. And that's a great way to learn, because the best way to learn something is to teach it to someone else. This book, I knew Git pretty well. And so I'd say the first half of the book was quite easy to write. The hard part was putting it into a coherent order and making it viable for people who have never used version control. Mm-hmm. The second half of the book was more challenging because I wanted to go to topics that typical Git users might not be aware of. And then a chapter on how do you get yourself out of trouble. So it was a mix. Packet was strong about the agreed upon timing of the book. And that's always interesting because when I propose a book, I'm supposed to give them a table of contents. And who knows what should be in the table of contents? So I put out something that seems reasonable. And of course, then I'm constantly changing it and they're constantly pulling their hair out. And it's an interesting conversation.
Yes, I bet. I'm actually currently writing a book as well. And when I was pitching it to publishers, they wanted the first chapter and they wanted the full table of contents. And I'm like, well, that's probably going to change as I write this thing, because it's going to keep evolving as I restructure and think of better ways to position it.
What's your book on?
It's on color for data storytelling. So it's all about the importance of color, accessibility, color blindness, how do you pick a color, staying in brand, and there's a lot that goes into it, color theory, color psychology. So let's see where that gets me. Hopefully by early next year, the book will be out.
Well, you'll have to tell me the name of the book, because that sounds great.
Color for Data Storytelling. For now, I don't have a
whole thing.
It's kind of like Git for Programmers. This is Color for Data Storytelling. All right, I'm going to go ahead and draw our very first winner here. So good luck to everybody. Click draw.
Whoa.
Yeah, I told you this is a fun little raffle game. And I'm just going to jot down the winner of the book, Git for Programmers. Congratulations, John Herrick. I like how it pauses on someone else's name, gives them
yes,
hope.
Yes, yes, just a great. Awesome. Well, that's a great, is that built into this software?
Yes. This is part of StreamYard's offer here. You can do as many giveaways as you'd like throughout sessions. We're going to do one more at the end. But yes, happy to show you, Jesse, at the end, how all of this works.
It's very, very cool.
We had a question earlier on about C#. So the question was, do you include relevant case studies in C# and important logic points? Please let us know.
No, this is not a book on C#. It's a book on Git. I do use very, very simple C# examples so that we have something to put into the repository. Yeah. But the target here was to make it available to non-C# programmers.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that. Yeah. I assumed you'd have an answer for that since you've written a book on everything. So
I do have a book on C#, but it's very old. And so I recommend it was taken over by Ian Griffiths. And he did a really good job with programming C#. And then O'Reilly has a few other really good books on C#. There are a bunch of good books on C# and C# in depth. What's it called? C# in depth. Yeah, that's very good.
Okay.
It's another very good C# book, but this isn't that.
All right. Awesome. We've got a question here on just where the world is going. So the world is changing faster than expected, and now Python support / syntax friendly than C/ C++ days. Where do you think is the tech programming going in the next 3 years or so?
I can tell you that for 20 years, I've been making predictions about where we'll be in 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I am consistent in being wrong. So good luck in predicting. I mean, who could have foreseen some of the acquisitions by Microsoft? Who could have seen a C# framework for cross-platform development of mobile applications? I mean, some people could have foreseen it. I did not foresee it. And I haven't even foreseen some of the new features in C# 8, 9, and 10. Hmm. So 3 years? 3 years is, you know, a century in programmer time.
So you're not going to take your chances here by making a guess? So, okay.
Not even going to try. I would be shocked if C# isn't around. And I would be shocked if, I think he mentioned Python.
Yeah.
I'm shocked if that's not around. But they're really in two different worlds. The world I know is the .NET world. Mm-hmm. And it is evolving quickly. But I'd be surprised if there are wholesale changes. I think it's evolving rather than just being replaced each time.
That makes sense. And you're not the first guest on the show to kind of skirt the question of predictions. They're like, we know this is going to be recorded and played again a few years from now. I'm going to hold my predictions to myself.
Right. I'm hoping that mute button's working because the cough.
It is. It actually works. I'm like, how are you so fast? You just muted your cough right there.
Yeah, apologize for that.
No worries. All right. Question here. Are you writing a book on Python for machine learning?
I have never written anything in Python.
Not even Hello World in Python?
Not even Hello World. I would like to at some point, but I've been a C# programmer for 20 years and so I know a lot of the tools around that, and I know a lot of the tools and languages around databases and web programming and mobile programming, but it's all within .NET.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. You live in your space. I like that. That's okay. Question here from Mohammed, and he's asking, can we solve conflicts without depending on any IDE?
Absolutely. You can solve your conflicts at the command line. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, that's quite straightforward. When I get a conflict, I do one of two things. I either use kbdiff3 because it makes it very easy to choose which of the two conflicting or both that you want to use. Visual Studio's Git support has gotten so good that I've started using that. You can use the command line. It's just annoying.
Yeah, I guess sometimes you'd have to use the command line though, right? If you really, if your IDE couldn't do what you needed it to do.
Yes. If you had asked me last year, I would have said that. I would have said, GUIs are great, but they have limitations, and there are things you can do at the command line that you can't do in a GUI. Visual Studio, again, has gotten so good. I'm not sure that's true anymore. There are some things that I know well enough at the command line and would scare me enough in Visual Studio that I still use the command line. The book, should have said this earlier. The book shows just about everything in three ways. One is at the command line. Mm-hmm. One is using GitHub Desktop because it's very simple GUI, and one using Visual Studio 2019 because it's a more powerful GUI. There are some other excellent GUIs out there. There's Fork, and there's, I think, Tortoise, and there are a couple others mm-hmm. that are very good. SourceTree is a good one, but I tend to use just two, the command line or Visual Studio.
Yeah, I think Visual Studio was the most popular one. Like when you search for GUIs, like which one is best, that seems to be the most used, which I guess would have the most support if you ran into an issue.
Well, certainly in the .NET world, that would be true. I mean, if you're using Visual Studio anyway, I wouldn't run out and get Visual Studio just for its Git support.
Okay.
You know, there are a lot of other ways to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So a question I had for you regarding Git. Now, you've wrote a book on it. You've used it for several years. If you could change one thing as an improvement, what sort of change would you make to it? If you had a wish list, a little genie came to you right now.
That's a great question. I would make it easier to back out and know what you're backing out specifically, make it easier to pick out of a commit some changes, make that very obvious how to do that. I think the biggest problem in any source code control is you check in a whole bunch of changes and then you realize one of those changes was not right, but you've made three commits since then. And A, how do you find it, which we can talk about using the command bisect. But the other is, how do you just pull that little bit out without breaking everything else?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sometimes it feels like a game of Jenga.
Well, I mean, everyone has a wish list, so it's good to hear what's on your wish list. In terms of the book, who would you say, I know it says Git for programmers, but what sort of programmers, who would benefit the most from reading your book?
Well, if I did it right, there'd be two sets of programmers. One would be people who have not used version control or not used Git in any case. Okay. And then the second group would be people who have used Git, who could skip over the first few chapters mm-hmm. and then hopefully find some new stuff. But in terms of what language you use or what world you live in, if I did it right, it doesn't matter.
Okay. All right. I'm sure you did it right. After all this experience of writing books, I'd be surprised if you don't get it right.
Yeah, but I'm older and slower and dumber now. But okay.
Wiser. The word is wiser.
That's it. Wiser. Yes.
And I know some books are meant to be read kind of from page one to the last page. Would you say yours is one of those books that you recommend people start from the beginning and go through the end or kind of skip around when they have questions?
No, I would take it. I mean, you can skip around. I'm not going to like come to your house and slap your hand, but I think the book is most valuable if you read it from start. Skipping the things that you don't care about. But, you know, it wasn't designed to be, can be used as a reference book where you say, oh, well, I just need a refresher on this thing. Mm-hmm. But if you want to know quickly what the command is to do X, I would just Google it.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Sometimes you need an answer right away, especially if you could just copy paste it instead of typing it in. People are lazy, you know, not me, but others. No, no. I've never done that, no.
Well, one of the things that I've started doing with programming books is I started buying the paper version and the Kindle version.
Okay.
And the reason for that is that I can put the Kindle side by side with my code and build my code while I'm reading, and also I can copy and paste.
Okay.
So that's kind of a nice feature. And so this book is in version, let's try that in English. This book is available in both Kindle and paper. And I recommend everybody go out and buy both.
Yes, everybody, right now. Right. Unless you've won the book, then, you know, we're going to ship it to you. But everybody else, yes.
And I have to say my wife works in an independent bookstore. So find your independent bookstore and buy it there. Or else buy it on the Evil Empire. Either way.
You mean Amazon? Or?
I wouldn't say that.
No, of course not. Yeah. I mean, that's where I get all my books. That's where I got your books.
I get all mine. I read a Kindle, so I get all my books from Amazon.
I kind of miss the bookstores. I used to go there. All of our Barnes & Nobles around where I lived in New York, they all closed down. Even the libraries are closed now. But anyways, hopefully soon we'll be able to go to a place with books again and see them. There was a question here for you. You know, who is inspiring you to write these books? Is it from your mind or somebody is out there inspiring you to write them?
And typically, I think of it and pitch it to the publisher. But occasionally a publisher will come to me and say, can you do a book on this or that?
Mm-hmm.
I have an idea for yet another book on C-sharp to boil C-sharp down to a very small book. And mm-hmm. we'll see if that goes anywhere. But no, other than my dog, there's no inspiration.
Okay. Do you have your dog there or no?
Yeah, he's right over there.
Okay, well, maybe we'll get a chance to see your dog.
He's old.
Wise, you mean wise, right?
Wise, I mean wise.
Okay, we had a question here from Brian, and he says, you know, he's been developing in .NET and C# as well for a while. For many years, they used Team Foundation Services, TFS, and now mm-hmm. Azure DevOps using the TFVC format. They're switching over to Git. Any recommendations for those switching from TFVC over to Git?
Well, my first recommendation is to buy my book and or a book like it that explains both the fundamentals and the advanced topics. It's difficult to switch to Git. It's difficult to get your head around how it works and what it's doing. But once you do, Git is not all that scary. And my advice would be, especially if you're using Azure DevOps, my advice would be to dive in and also to let Azure DevOps help you set up in your CI/CD, assuming you're doing continuous integration, continuous delivery, set up to catch any issues with your code. There's a wonderful lint called SonarQube, which you can use together with that. But the main thing is, get specific, is to keep track of what you're checking in, what you're committing, what's mm-hmm. on the repository. Has somebody made changes that you need to pull down? And are you going to step on somebody else's work? Which means the main thing is to pull, which brings it from the repository to yours, and merge into your working code very frequently, because that way you surface issues very early, which makes them much easier to fix.
All right. Thank you. Brian, hopefully we've got that answer to your question. So thank you so much, Jesse. We are getting close to announcing the second winner of the book, but before we get there, guys, type in #liberty to participate. Jesse, as the Git guru, if I can call you that.
Oh, no.
Git guru, no? what sort of questions do people come to you? I mean, we've gotten some questions here already, but what are some of the most common questions that you get from people?
One is, what's rebase and why is it so scary? And hopefully I've made it less scary, because it's really pretty straightforward. The biggest question I get is, yikes, I'm in trouble. How do I get out? That's a question I get asked a lot, and that's a question I ask a lot. So, mm-hmm. you know, get it, it's very, very hard to lose your work with Git. You have to work at it to lose your work. But you can get yourself into a place where you're not sure what to do next and you're nervous about losing your work.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the great things about Git, you could conceivably lose all the work you did since the last commit, which is why I believe in frequent commits. But losing anything that's in the repository is next to impossible. There mm-hmm. is a controversy about how often you should commit. I'll just dive into that for 1 second.
Okay.
There are people who believe that you should finish a unit of work and then do a commit. And then there are people like me who believe in commit so frequently because I don't want to lose anything. And then there's a technique called interactive rebasing, which lets you squish down those commits into just a couple, which you can then add the right message to. And it's as if you had done the first approach, but you get the safety of the second approach. Interactive rebase is covered in the book. Interestingly, it is, from a user's perspective, it has just about nothing to do with rebase.
Okay. Yeah, you know, it reminds me of, I saw a sign somewhere, in case of fire, git, commit, and then leave, yep, or something like that.
I have a mug that says it, and a t-shirt and a sign on my door. It says, in case of fire, git, commit, git, push, leave building.
In that order, exactly.
In that order, that's great.
So there's no automated kind of, like, you know, when you're working in a Word doc and you control S for saving, or then sometimes, mm-hmm, it auto saves. There's no auto save.
Well, it depends on there's auto save in, for example, Visual Studio Code.
Yep.
But that's saving to your local machine. Mm-hmm. There's no auto save that says put this into my local repository or push this to my remote repository.
Okay.
Which is why I say commit frequently. When, yeah, you commit, what you're doing is taking the code that's local on your machine and putting it into the repository that's on your machine. Mm-hmm. And then when you push, you're taking what's in the repository on your local machine and putting it on a central repository like GitHub.
Okay. All right. Very helpful. Thank you. We had a question here from James, and he's asking, in this book, do you cover Git flow?
Okay. There's two possible things you mean. One is, do I cover the workflow? And the answer to that is yes.
Okay.
The second thing he might mean is, I don't know what he might mean.
Okay. So
I'm sure there's something else called GetFlow, but I don't.
James, if you want to clarify, we could take the question. We had another question here from Shashank, and he's asking, do you think Git is going to be replaced by any software in the future, with, you said, over 90% of programmers currently using it?
It depends on what you mean by in the future. And it's going to depend a lot on what comes along to challenge it. It's really entrenched at this point and, yeah, really supported by virtually every open source project. And now it's owned by Microsoft. It's hard to believe in the short term that it's going to be replaced. And who is it? Keynes, who said in the long term, we'll all be dead.
Very optimistic chat.
Yeah.
Let's go to, James said workflow is good.
Oh, good. Yes, I do cover that.
Okay, perfect. Are you planning to launch t-shirts with your book name by any chance?
We'll have to talk to Packet about that. I love the idea. What I want is lightweight jackets.
Okay.
With the picture of the book on the back and my name on the front. And that would be very cool. If somebody wants to print those and give them to me for free, I'm happy to wear them.
Yeah, you can do Amazon merch. That's how I sell dedicated shirts. So you can actually create your own if you wanted to.
Yeah, no.
No, okay. All right, so we're going to go ahead and announce our second winner. And as we do that, oh, we've got 38 entries here. I'm going to go ahead and hit draw. Jesse, maybe you can tell us about any future books that you're planning to write, probably by tomorrow at the rate you're going.
Well, as I said, I'm pitching a book on the absolute minimal that you need to know about C sharp. But wait, it's slowing down.
It's slowing down. Oh,
there we go.
Congratulations, Kevin.
I like the confetti.
Yeah, the only thing we're missing at this point, I'll let the confetti drop before I close. Okay, there we go. The only thing we're missing is a drum roll. Actually, on my show, was it last week? We had an ex-professional drummer as, mm-hmm, a guest. So he actually gave a really nice drum roll with his fingers.
That's great.
At the end, yes.
Yeah, the only musical instrument I play is the stereo.
The stereo, okay.
It's an old term. People don't talk about stereos anymore.
Yeah,
the only instrument I play is MP3.
MP3, yes. Or we play on each other's nerves. That's what we used to say. So.
That's good. That's good. I like it.
Yes. All right. So sorry, we kind of interrupted you about the next book because the thing was slowing down.
No, it's fine. It's not at all certain. So it's
okay.
But you can find out about it. Can I pitch my website?
Yes, go for it, please.
At jesseliberty.com. And you can reach me on Twitter and at Jesse Liberty. There's a pattern here evolving. But I announce books and such on both my website and on my Twitter account. I have a LinkedIn account, which no surprise is LinkedIn IN Jesse Liberty. But I must confess that I'm not on in as much as I am on some other social media.
You're on there right now. You're live on LinkedIn, Jesse. This is.
I know. I shouldn't have said that because it's LinkedIn who's sponsoring this. I used LinkedIn extensively when I was looking for work, and they were great for that.
You know, they really transformed, I think, in the past, I'd say 4 or 5 years from being just a job site to really being a really great place for content, for news. That's where I learn almost everything that I know is actually on LinkedIn. I spend 99% of my screen time, I think, on
that. Thank you for rescuing me from that. And what's absurd is I did 2 videos for LinkedIn Learning. And
oh, you did?
I said that thing. But well, this is live, so we can't really cut it. So
we wouldn't want to. This is live for a reason. People like live. People like the real conversations, nothing that, you know, we practice 10 times over and then it comes out all fake and everything. I know you have to jump soon, but can we take one more question?
Sure, absolutely.
Thank you. All right. A question is, what are your thoughts on using Git or something else or preserving work for data analytics type work that does not use code?
Boy, you're way beyond me. Git will certainly work with things other than code. I used Git when I was writing my book to keep different versions. I also used Google Docs. So there's a lot of different ways of doing that. But I know next to nothing about data analytics.
Okay.
Let's take one more question.
All right. I mean, there are comments around your shirt. Plenty of people, please launch the business. Looking forward to your shirt. So, you know, that's one more question I had for you. I know you really wanted to talk about the meaning of life. So go ahead, Jesse. I'll let you take the stage.
42. And if you're a Douglas Adams fan, that'll make a lot of sense to you. And if you're not, go become a Douglas Adams fan.
So that's about it for us, Jesse. That's, the answer is 42. I love it. For those who want to reach out and connect with you, I know you already mentioned Twitter. You will start using LinkedIn a lot more now, obviously.
Yes.
And you've got your great website. And all you need to remember, guys, is Jesse Liberty for all of
for
that.
For everything, yes. Exactly.
For everything. And yes, buy the book, Git for Programmers. Jesse, thank you so much for doing this session. It looks like people really got a lot of value out of the conversation. They're asking for, you know, bring more interviews from hashtag Liberty. So
great.
I love that. Okay, at this point, we're gonna wrap up. And I'm going to just thank you again, Jesse, for your time. And a really huge thanks for the audience for being awesome and for engaging and asking great questions. And, you know, stay tuned. The Datacated Expo is coming up on October 5th, and I'll post more info about that online. In the meantime, I'll see everybody online. Have a great rest of your week.